Today on the Voices of Legacy, we're honored to welcome a trailblazer in local government, an inspiring individual in her own right, even though I kind of know her, so she wouldn't say that for herself. The chair of the Lucas County Board of Commissioners, Commissioner Lopez. She's an attorney, graduate of the University of Toledo College of Law, and a leader whose story reflects perseverance, community commitment, and service with some historical milestones that we'll probably talk about today here on the Voices of Legacy. We are truly honored to have none other than a local legend in her own right, Miss Anita Lopez. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing well. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much for being here. We surely appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to talk to us, well, about you. Tell us more about yourself. Some things maybe people might not know.
Well, I think most folks know that I'm from the city of Toledo originally, born in South Toledo, and I am a constant talker. So, and I work sometimes late at night, and people will get my emails and wake up in the morning saying, "What was she doing at 2 or 4 a.m.?" But I have a tendency.
So you actually reply.
They don't reply. They just look and think. She's working again. One of the things I've learned to do is if I can't sleep at night, it's better to jot an email down or write it down on a notepad so then I can stop thinking about it and put it to paper or now text.
Yeah.
And then get that thought or idea or solving that issue out of my mind so then I can sleep peacefully.
Wow. So how do you separate work from home?
Well, that is something I've been striving to do since 2024. I think it's hard because I love what I do, and sometimes I don't operate in a traditional – I don't think public service, being a public servant, does not operate in an 8-to-4, 8-to-5 desk environment. I think for me, my children are well – accustomed to the fact driving to Cedar Point on the way there, mom's going to get a bunch of calls and she's going to work while the boys are all loud in the back and with their friends giggling. And I'm going to be like, "No, this one's important. You need to really be quiet, guys." And they're like, "Hee hee hee." And then I'm taking a call because it's important. Mm. And they know that that's what mom loves to do. So I try to now. Block off certain days so that I can get that mental re-energy again to stay focused and give my 100%.
Awesome, awesome. So you said boys.
Yes.
Plural.
I have two sons.
Ah.
And they have always friends with them. So, and yes, my oldest is 25 this year and my youngest will be 23 this year.
Oh, wow. Wow, wow. I would have never guessed that you have a 25 and a 23.
Yes, thank you very much,
work has kept you young.
Yes.
Or they've kept you young.
They have kept me young. Life has kept me young. When you love what you're doing, you're blessed.
Yeah.
It is very exciting to wake up every day.
So how does it feel? And I know I'll probably ask some loaded questions, but hopefully no gotcha questions. To have made history even in your profession, as you have twice.
I'm grateful. You know, when you're going through those elections and you're going through setting a goal or your dream, you really don't realize that you're going to be the first. You just know that that goal is ahead of you.
Yeah.
And then sort of afterwards is when people say, "Wow, you won. You're the first female." Yeah. And you know, then it sort of...
Yeah, and you didn't run to be the first female. You just ran because you felt the calling, I'm assuming.
Correct. Yeah. Or I went to college because I desired better opportunities for myself and my family. So going to college and being the first, I didn't think about that I was going to be the first. I just knew I had a desire for higher education. And I really took it to heart what my teacher said is that getting a higher education will provide a better quality of life for you and your family. And more income, because I was definitely an 80s girl. And, you know, I was definitely all about money.
Well, that's not a bad thing. You got to have it. It's like air to survive. So you graduated from the University of Toledo. to be an attorney or to go into public service?
Both. I think I fell in love with many political speeches, mm-hmm. and I knew that, one, being an attorney was going to make money. And then, two, I knew at an early age that I wanted to give back to the community. And I fell in love watching history channels or old clips with my father of John F. Kennedy. You know, I always tell folks there were two things that was at the top of our steps when we went to bed, was a photo of the Pope and a photo of John F. Kennedy. Mm. And those photos remain there even after Pope John's passed away and John F. Kennedy passed away. In fact, until my parents actually moved from that home, those were two important images that had impacted our household. And so I knew that being in office could make a difference in people's lives.
Wow. And you mentioned your father. He was a great inspiration for you.
Yes. He was a meat cutter. He actually was a migrant worker, mm-hmm. worked the fields, and then...
Both your parents, yes?
Yeah, both my parents were migrant workers, mm-hmm. worked the fields. They actually met at the Valentine Theater here in Toledo, Ohio.
Oh, wow.
And when they were still showing movies. And my mother lived in Michigan. My father was living in Toledo. They were both there for the summer. Mm-hmm. And my grandfather had passed away. And then my dad decided that he was not going to move anymore. He hated being a migrant worker. He hated being pulled out of school mid-season to follow the crops.
Yeah.
And he could never complete his education because they had to move with the weather. So they go to Florida, Texas, Ohio, Michigan, back and forth. And so once my grandfather had passed away in Toledo, he said, we're staying and I'm going to get a job. And so he really was a trailblazer himself. And then the first to get a union job here as a butcher meat cutter for Toledo Meats. And then really changed his parenting with me because he had health problems. And unfortunately, he was stuck at home. And misery loves company sometimes. So my dad basically had all the time in the world to lecture or share how he would have done things differently in his life when he was having health problems. And since I was the youngest child there in the home, I sort of had a different relationship with him. And he was real candid about how he had raised my older sisters to be wives and good housekeepers. And he said, I never thought that I should be talking to my children about getting their education. I was preparing them to get jobs and be good wives. And he said, now, in hindsight, he said, maybe you need to be paying attention more to the books. Whoa. So I did.
Wow, that is amazing. That's awesome. Awesome. I would never guess that you're the youngest of all?
I am the youngest of seven.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so you're daddy's little girl.
Yes.
Wow. Well, that's amazing to me. And it makes sense. Sometimes the influences of parents, fathers and mothers, discount it. And it's so important to get that positive affirmation and get that time together. And it sounds like out of necessity, you got time that a lot of people don't get.
I did. I out of, unfortunately, a very challenging time for my dad, because being the breadwinner and then no longer being able to be the breadwinner and restricted to the house because of his health, he really was very stern and very frank about life and the challenges he had faced. And so I was, you know, I was his daddy's girl, baby girl, and then I became his pest. And then I suddenly was questioned. I suddenly felt like I had a seat at the table because I started working at 14 as a result of his health problems.
Oh, my goodness. That's awesome. So you got to work pretty early. What were you doing, do you call?
I started off actually in, again, one of the great programs that our government has provided us was the Private Industry Council. Mm-hmm. They would hire youth who were on low income and place them, and sometimes adults, place them in businesses and organizations throughout the city of Toledo. And so at 14, I applied for that job, and I was placed at the Boys and Girls Club.
Oh, wow. So it just seems like everything was just lining right up.
Well, if you don't believe in God, I tell you, there's a plan and there's a way. And yeah, I literally was just wonderful opportunities, again, by government, you know. So I guess that ultimately, again, led to my calling to run for office.
Wow. Well, what was your first attempt at any type of office, even maybe in school or college? Or
I did not. Well, I guess in college, I ran to be the president of the, at the time it was called MECHA, which is an old terminology from the 80s, but ultimately became the Hispanic College Association. And then actually I was appointed to student government. You're automatically appointed to student government at the university by being a president of an organization. So I was on student government also. So there's politics everywhere, and university politics also exists.
Oh, yes. Yes. And in the church as well.
Yes.
Wow. That's amazing. As you progressed in life through your occupation, your first job was?
Boys and Girls Club. I was actually.
So that was the first job, period.
Payroll clerk. Not payroll, but it used to be a turnstile where you could actually like go in. But then they still called it like the turnstile clerk, even though the turnstile disappeared.
Over on Detroit?
No, actually, I ended up on the one on South Street by the Anthony Wayne Trail.
Know exactly where that was. Or is.
Yeah. Yep. That ultimately then was merged into Marshall Elementary.
Wow. 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 That's amazing. So that was your first paid position?
Paid job, yes.
And then that led into other things as you went
on? I stayed with them throughout high school. And then, like every other kid, you want more money. And then I started working, you name it, I found a job there. Clerical, cashiering, then I became a head cashier. And then I went to college. So basically I realized, wow, you could work, you know, during the day, go to college at night, and on the weekends you can get waitressing jobs, grocery jobs. And so I worked anytime I could get a job. I usually always had at least 2 to 3 jobs throughout college.
How many jobs?
Remember, you can. I would be a waitress, and you could go work at one of the local I shouldn't say, but one of the local nightclubs downtown, because in the 80s and 90s, those were really big still. And you could go to work at 8 p.m. and work until 2 a.m. And still, you could earn about $100 cash each night waitressing.
Oh, wow.
So pick up 2 nights and, you know, you have money.
Wow.
Waitressing on the weekends, just being a waitress at a restaurant. You
so
could.
You're just a hustler, baby.
Well, you know what? I had to. At that point, my father was still disabled.
Oh, okay.
So I was living at home, and my mother had. She was a stay-at-home mother majority of my life until my father's health. He had a major heart attack and then ultimately had a stroke and then was permanently disabled.
Wow.
And so my mother started working when I turned 14. My sister started working, and myself. And the three of us. You know, one of the things my dad asked us was not to lose the home. So he said, you got to make that house payment. Yep, you have to make that house payment.
Made it happen. That's amazing. That's good. So you felt the weight and responsibility of the household even at a young age.
I learned the weight of being a homeowner and a parent at an early age.
Wow. Wow. That's really makes sense for what I know of you. And I think a lot of people that may know you, man, that does add up. It really does, because it's made you into who you are now in public service. Doesn't seem like you know the definition of quit or give up.
I don't think you get a choice sometimes in life.
Yeah.
And I think because my father was so vocal, because he couldn't leave the house, so he had a lot of opinions to share. And a lot of guidance, that it wasn't as if, oh gosh, he just didn't say, we can't work, you know, I can't work, we're going to have to sell the house and we're going to have to rent. He basically made it clear we're not losing the house. And he set standards. I think he set standards for me. And then he set standards for us that still, because at that time, my 5 older brothers and sisters had already moved out. And so, and they were out of the state at that point. And so he just basically set the bar, and we sort of just rose to the occasion.
Wow. That's amazing. It's a good testimony to, well, the unity of family and the purpose of supporting family. And even in the community at large, in ministry in particular, which I know food ministry is a thing that you're greatly involved in as well to this day. when you have that communal connection, it kind of surpasses all the differences, even in your family, but definitely outside of the family, to get to that common goal of caring for one another. And that's an amazing thing to have ingrained in you from a young age.
And I think the community, again, what you said, the community, and, you know, it was our first time getting on public assistance. Mm-hmm. And that was really hard for my family because my mother, God bless her, she's still alive today. Don't be upset with me, Mom. I have a cold, so that's why I sound a little different. But, I mean, she was always critical of people who were on public assistance.
Mm-hmm. Until we
had to be on public assistance.
Yeah.
So it really changed my perspective to understand, wow, this is what public welfare means.
Mm-hmm.
And that I can still remember going with my mother, because my mother and father did not write very well. So I was always perceived as the youngest one in the house. And I was sort of perceived as someone who was really good at writing and reading. And so, because there was no one else left. And so my mom would make me come with her to fill out the applications and complete everything. And I can still remember the caseworker, and I wish I had known her name and I could remember that. But she said, your husband worked his entire life. Like, you've paid into the system.
That's exactly right.
Don't, you know, this is what it's for. It's supposed to help you during these times. And you could see the relief, like the shame go away from my mother's face. But what they didn't understand was they were teaching a young child of the importance of government, the importance of having that community assistance.
Yeah.
And someday, in my lifetime, I was fortunate to say that when I'm making government decisions, I understand there's a young child out there who may not understand what's happening in their lives or how it happened, but how we act and treat them is going to make a difference in their lives, from a really bad day to a really good day.
Oh, yes. Yes. And changing them into either yourself, myself, or who knows what they may be, with that little bit of encouragement to understand that as you pay into the system, it shouldn't be a pejorative that you get any type of public assistance. It shouldn't be a lifestyle by far, but it shouldn't be a bad word at all. I don't think it should be.
When others pay into the system too, because we know we've been blessed not to have to be on the system, right? So I think that's another thing we need to emphasize, is that we are fortunate that we can help others, and we are fortunate because we have a good income and we've been able to get employed and advance. And so setting aside a little bit, I know people, believe me, I'm very critical of property taxation many times, but at the same time, I also realize that we are the best country in the world, and that is why we have those resources set aside to help individuals who have not been as fortunate as us. And that distinguishes us from almost every country in the United States. And I mean, not in the world, in the world, how sophisticated and how prepared we are, even with our Social Security benefits and our seniors. So that's something I think we need to be proud of.
Absolutely. I do agree. You've broken barriers, both as the first woman elected auditor in Lucas County, if that's correct, and the first Latina county commissioner. What does those two milestones mean personally and communally to you?
Well, I survived the election. I tell folks all the time.
Was it hard a little bit?
Oh, yes. Well, I always create havoc for myself. So, you know, I always go back, not to blame my dad. God bless him. He's passed away in 2020, but he was really stern and outspoken. And so sometimes I sit there and I say, sometimes I can be super nice, and then suddenly I figure out, like, things aren't going well. And then I, you know, my stern tough dad comes out in not the most professional way. And so I tell folks, I'm like, oh, I'm totally Lee Lopez, like my dad. You know, but you knew when you were doing things really, really great. But then when you were really off, my dad made it very clear, like, no, that is not going to happen.
Yeah.
With this stern, loud voice. And but you know what? I think I was more focused on the goal of becoming the auditor, because I felt that the auditor wasn't doing his job. We were getting so I was his, like, sister office, the recorder at the time. And we'd get so many calls, and they became comfortable with transferring calls to my office.
Oh, boy.
The recorder's office, because we took the time to answer people's questions, even if it was not a county question, but it was a City of Toledo question. And I would tell my staff, write the question down. If you don't know the answer, what is the trash number? I've got a dog roaming in the streets. Even if it was a random call and it didn't belong to our office, take the time, write the information down, and then follow up with that citizen if you have the downtime. Because they don't want to go jumping through hoops. Get the right phone number. Get a contact that you can say, Sarah's on the other line. She's going to take the call for you. And I thought, wow, if they handle citizens this way, I wonder how they're handling everything else. And it was not really glamorous. People were like, no, you're not going to run a campaign on saying they really treat citizens bad. You need to, like, talk about other things. And so, I again, it wasn't really necessarily about being the first. It was about how can I provide quality to the people we serve, the people who pay for our jobs, and who really look to government for guidance and help. And you should be able to count on us to do that. And then, again, running for commissioner, you know, I tell folks, one of the moments that really impacted me was when Adelante, which was a social service entity that was actually created by Jack Ford under Sassy, and he was the director at that time in the early 90s. Adelante closed because of mishandling of the agency's funds by the director. And when we appealed to the mental health board, we had Baltimore Velasquez, we had multiple community and board members saying, actually board members of other agencies saying, look, let us try to fix this. Give us some money to get the, let's not shut down the organization. Let us hold this person accountable. Let's get a new board in. Let's really create some checks and balances. But the clients, unbeknownst to them, the board at the time shut the doors down, did not even give notice. We had children being dropped off after school thinking they're going to an after school program, and there was no one there. And so we were begging mental health board that I would say many individuals in South Toledo who were predominantly Hispanic saying, let us give us some funds to bridge this. We'll do what we have to do. I was the auditor at the time. I was begging them and they were like, nope, we're not going to do it. Like, you guys should have all been involved beforehand. And so that closed. And I thought, auditor does not have any juice. Like, it does not matter. And I realized what really bothered me was how could an entity like this that was funded with taxpayers' dollars get this far down the road with no one having any checks and balances with taxpayers' dollars? How many other agents? And what I found out was we were the only foolish ones who actually came back and asked for a second chance. When this traditionally happened with nonprofits, they just never came back and asked for money. Once the money had been mishandled or the agency financially was unstable and it could be proven, then they just closed down. They just went away. They never tried to go to the mental health board or any of the other funders, the state funders, and say, give us a second chance. We really want to keep this entity open. The community didn't rally behind them. And it nobody really knows, you know, what happened to those dollars, or should criminal charges have been brought up.
Oh, so they just let it go.
And that's what I learned from the mental health board.
Oh, my goodness.
And they just basically were, you guys are the only ones who've ever tried to come back and say, yeah, this really bad thing happened, but you want to try to still salvage this organization. And then I said, you know what?
Time to move to another
position. To move to a new job where I can have greater influence. Because what, again, really bothered me was the fact that children and families that counted on that agency had nobody looking out for them, unfortunately, from the board, from a fiscal standpoint, and the government entity that gave those dollars were not monitoring those dollars. And that really alerted me. And once I realized that the commissioners appointed board members and has huge impact in funding, job and family services, general fund dollars, hiring, greater influence. I said, unbeknownst to my family, I'm going to take a pay cut and run for commissioner.
What did they say?
They were like, oh, she's doing it again.
Oh, boy.
Yes.
More attention.
So it wasn't about being the first. It was about a cause. It was about a mission again. And one of the things that I'm very passionate about now is putting in internal controls, monitoring, and questioning where our dollars are going and how are we holding people accountable. Because it's the child, that child like I was, who needed those resources, who needed the after school programs, that even though I was an employee, but who needed to know those certain agencies were going to be there for my mom and dad when we were going through tough times.
So if you're going in with that mentality, everybody can't be happy that you're coming in to shake the tree. Somebody's going to follow out.
They're adjusting.
Yeah.
People are adjusting.
Yeah.
I think it's a different perspective because it's, I think so many folks are worried about, if I shake this tree, will this now create challenges for my next reelection? And I think one of the best things that happened to me in life was seeing my father fall health-wise and knowing that he lost his income and we had to start over again, was knowing that you can hit rock bottom and you can always go up. There's going to be finally, you're going to reach the bottom. And there's only one way to go then at that point is up. So once you've gone through that and you've, you as a whole and you have family that literally dig yourself out of poverty, you've had to, you know, focus on the very basics to get ahead. You're like, I've been there. What's the worst that can happen to me? I'm poor again. I know how to get out of that. I know how to get my education.
Been there, done that.
I know how to work three or four jobs if I have to. And now being a lawyer, it gives you that sense of confidence that I'd rather be here doing the right things or let me go make money as a lawyer. You know, let me go represent people in another capacity, but still being an advocate.
So the biggest challenges in the transition from the auditor's office to the county commission has been what?
Everyone calls you commissioner. I don't even know my first name anymore. I mean, it is completely
commish.
It is definitely a higher level of what do I want to say? Authority and people immediately change your name and call you by your title. And You have an employee. You have the ability. You have a weekly meeting where if you want to speak about something publicly, on the Diaz, is that how you pronounce this? Then you have that opportunity to do so. You also have the opportunity. You know, auditor has a press conference. It's going to be about property taxation. It's going to be about property values, dog licensing. When the commissioner holds a press conference, it could be anything that's happening in our country. It could be ICE. It could be TPS closing or laying off, you know, 30 employees. It could be call to the attention of homelessness, call the attention of any matter of public concern, because we touch in all those areas, economic development, Job and Family Services, which is ironic, the organization that helped our family, I am now over public welfare as a commissioner. Workforce development, employees. Again, that's why running for commissioner was so important, because you could talk about the problems or you can try to be in charge of organizations. Employment is so key, and employment for youth is so key, because once you get that taste of money, wow, I can earn money, and I'm earning this money at 14. And I don't have to hustle on the streets. I don't have to be some drug dealer's girlfriend.
Look over your shoulder.
I don't have to count on a man for income as a young Hispanic woman in the old South End. Or I don't, as my father said, you know, I want you to be able to provide for yourself So he used to say, so you don't end up with the Mexican like me. Because he was strict. He was old school. Yeah. He was controlling.
Very traditional.
Oh, my goodness. Machismo. Yeah. And he would say, well, yeah. I'm like, he goes, I didn't know any better. That's how my father was. And he goes, so I would be like, why are you this way? Why are you that way? And he was like, oh, gosh, this education is coming with a headache for me, too, because I started questioning our roles. Mm-hmm. But anyway, going back to that is that, yes, Commissioner has changed, mm-hmm. and I'm so grateful for the opportunity to serve.
There's a distinct difference, and I'm saying this for the reference of those that are listening, between county commission and city council. They are not even close to being the same, are they?
Correct. City council is a body of legislators, but the mayor we have a strong mayor. Mm-hmm. It's very rare you see city council block a vote of the mayor. Mm-hmm. Strong mayor has executive authority, basically almost like a mini president of mm-hmm. the city, and he pretty much rules the city. County commissioners, there's three of us, and mm-hmm. we are over the city, but we are also all over, all the way to Jerusalem Township, mm-hmm. which is just outside Oregon, all the way to White House, Ohio, mm-hmm. Bono, Ohio, just past Jerusalem, and then also Richfield Township. So, you know, our population is over 400,000, wow. 425,000 roughly.
So you're kind of like the sheriff's office. You cover everything.
Correct. The sheriff is an independent elected official, mm-hmm. but we're over his budget.
Ah.
So we're over the money.
Ah.
So elected officials come to us and present their wants, and then we try to tell them their needs.
So the next time you come here, because we're almost out of time, we can talk about that wonderful jailhouse.
Yes, I'd love to talk about wants versus needs.
Yes, there you go. Well, we appreciate you coming in today and sharing all that information. And we barely scratched the surface, but I think we got a good idea of where you came from. And for me personally, because I had gotten an opportunity some years ago to interact with you when you were in the auditor's office, of which I think wasn't Wade the auditor at one time?
Treasurer.
I always get that confused.
Yep.
So a lot of things are adding up how useful and helpful you were in that capacity. And I can never thank you enough for helping our church. I hope to look forward to even greater things for you in the future. You're relatively young, so I expect you'll probably be in office for some time.
God willing.
And yes. Maybe greater and better and better. You never know.
You just never know.
Yeah. Or a book.
Let's just get through office.
I'm just throwing it all out there.
I appreciate that. And again, I apologize. I'm a little congested.
Oh, that's okay. That's okay. You did well. But thank you again for coming to the Voices of Legacy and sharing your story. It's very important that people know you, aside from the public persona and what we read in the newspaper or see on the news. There's a person behind that. And thank you for sharing that with us today.
Thank you for the opportunity. I'm very grateful for WGTE.
Thank you for listening to the Voices of Legacy. This is your friend, Pastor Carl Mitchell III, your host of this program. We want you to go to wgte.org/legacy to like, share, subscribe, and hear all of our past podcasts and our future podcasts. Be a friend and join with us in the Voices of Legacy, where you're writing your own legacy every day that you live. Have a blessed day.
WGTE. Voices around us.